The Irish poet Nuala Ní Gonaill talks about her own work, particularly the poem The Language Issue.
The Language Issue, translated by Paul Muldoon. I place my hope on the water in this little boat of the language, the way a body might put an infant in a basket of intertwined iris leaves, its underside proofed with bitumen and pitch, then set the whole thing down amidst the sedge and bulrushes by the edge of a river, only to have it borne hither and thither, not knowing where it might end up, in the lap, perhaps, of some pharaoh's daughter. Kesht na tangan. Kurim mogochus snav imodin tangan, feimar elagfon ni anon ni gliavon, aver fit te furte de yilog of felestrum is bitumen agus pic ve kimulte len a hoen. An son ne lagashis imas ng yelkach, is kigil na manshi le teav na haun. Fiachant na the rish kadurig an srahe, fiachant dal a vish an borig inin aron.
This poem of yours, The Language Issue, it refers to a point in the Bible where a poor woman gives her child to the waters. In the case of your poem, the Irish language is the craft in which the child is set afloat. Craft, craft, two different kinds of craft. Yep. This child grows up to be something quite different from what the poor woman could have imagined. The great messianic male leader of the Jewish people, Moses.
Yeah, but you notice in the poem, it's the mother who makes the act of faith, who gives it to the waters. The rivers in Irish tradition were feminine, they're all goddesses' names. And okay, so, you know, in the Bible, the child turned out to be male. Well, that's just because I was using the biblical form. I mean, I just happened to find it with a handy myth, which I used. And it doesn't really bother me because, in a way, the child, rather than the fact that he's male, it's the child within, or the child as the image of the future.
Aren't you giving in this poem to the idea of Mother Ireland? Mother Ireland who gives her sons.
I never thought of that. No, I still think I was talking about me. I was talking about my writing a poem. If it has those connotations for you, then that's fine. I mean, I can't stop you putting those readings on it. But I was just talking about why the hell am I sitting up in my room day after day writing, you know, in a language which may be dead before I do, for all I know, while I could be down playing with my children.
When you saw Paul Muldoon's translation of your poem, what did you feel had been lost, if anything, in the translation?
Well, actually, if you're talking about word by word, Moses gets dropped in the English translation, right? Moses, the name Moses is in the Irish. But that really doesn't matter because we all know that story so well that Moses is implied. Actually, what I liked about it is that he managed to transpose into English the rhythmical patterns. And that's how Irish works. Irish is carried an awful lot by assonance, by half rhymes, and the poetry is carried by sound an awful lot. And he got that across, and I thought that's really great.
But I mean, asking the same question another way, you wrote the poem in Irish Gaelic, presumably because you felt that Irish Gaelic was the language for you to write the poem in. So something must have been lost in the translation.
Oh, yeah, of course. But, I mean, you know, life is an accumulation of losses, if, you know, such a paradox is possible. And you gain some, you lose some. You know, swings and roundabouts. But, I mean, I can't write in English, let's put it like that. So I've gained a translation. I've gained a poem in English, but I can't write poetry in English.
It's a very striking thing about your poems that most of the top Irish male poets have translated you.
No, that was a sort of flavour of the month for about a month. It was a fashion.
A fashion for translating you?
Yeah. I'm delighted with all the translations. I mean, I think a translation is a great compliment. And I take what I get, you know. Don't look gift horses.
You don't think that you're being turned into Mother Ireland?
No, I am not their muse. They're my translators, right?
In that article of yours, What For Mothers, you go on about how Irish women were excluded from the Irish Gaelic tradition of writing.
Yeah, that's true. Since then, I have actually done more research and I have found a few more. I mean, a few, but they're just kind of ghostly presences. They're here and they're not there. I mean, you get a few lines from here and a few lines from there. And if scholars do a lot more study, they will unearth a few more. But it's still, you know, not the canon.
When Seamus Heaney is talking about his language, as he does it a great deal in many of his very best poems. Do you feel it's your language as well that he's talking about?
No. No, he's talking about English, and that's fine, but that's not mine. I'm not even interested.
You don't think that language itself, English, Irish, English, Gaelic, is a common topic?
No, because I see what he does with the sort of Irish roots and things, you know, poems like Anna Horish, where he talks about the meanings of the words in Irish and then brings them into English. See, a poem like that or even a subject like that is quite redundant in Irish. It doesn't mean anything because the place names are anyway functional in Irish. You know, Cáin Rua means the red head and Cnoc Ard means the high mountain. You can do that in English, but you can't do that in Irish because it's not just that it's twee, but it's just meaningless. So you're talking about completely different registers that you're given as a poet.
You're very specifically thinking about the Irish Gaelic.
Oh, yeah,
language.
I am. Yeah. That's why I'm so pleased that Paul translated as the language issue, because kesht could mean question or issue or could mean lots of things, and he translated it as the language issue, and it is an issue. It's a political issue, and that's the word that's always used when we're talking about Irish in Ireland. It's an issue.
Can poetry actually help in this case?
Yes, it can. A poem is not a poem unless it's alive on the page, unless it jumps out of the page. If you can make a language alive on the page, that's the equivalent of a cultural Molotov cocktail.
But, I mean, you throw a Molotov cocktail into the streets. You can't throw a poem into the streets in the same way, can you?
Well, you can. They have a life of their own. You know, this whole question of translation is proof of it. I just wrote these poems in Irish, and then they walked away and walked the world and said, bye-bye, Mummy. Thank you very much, but I'm going, you know.
That is the image in your poem, The Language Issue. It's the image of the poem going away from you and becoming something different. But if it doesn't actually get into the streets of North Dublin, for instance...
It may not get into North Dublin, but it's getting into West Dublin. Tala now, you know, has a population problem. I mean, something like 60% of the people of Tala are unemployed, and everyone is mad learning Irish, which was really what it was at the turn of the century when the Gaelic League was founded. It's a genuinely empowering, enabling act.
What does it empower people to do?
Well, it helps them get out of the English language monolithic mentality, for starters, the hegemonic mentality. Now, this started in America, but is now genuinely global. It's taken over the world. It is the dominant discourse. Irish is different. Irish has a different mindset, and it's a way of creating general cultural diversity in Ireland, and that's all the more reason why I'm for it. I'd be for it anyway because I don't have any choice, you know.
You feel the language chose you rather than you choosing the language.
Yeah. But then having found that, I found that I've fallen into a gold mine, so I don't mind. Keep me going. It'll keep me out of mischief until I die, and I suppose that's one of the things you could expect in your life. One of the great things, to have a driving passion. And maybe I do it out of a form of defensiveness that I need to defend myself against the constant encroachment of English in me. I mean, I'm bilingual after all. You know, very deep within me, and maybe a lot of deep conflict about all of this. I'm a refuser to write poetry in English. But maybe it's not that. Maybe the poetry refuses to come in English. Let's put it like that.
When you're writing, I know this is an artificial question because writing is partly a spontaneous and unwilled thing, but when you're writing, is it more important to you that you're a woman or that you're Irish or that you're writing in Irish Gaelic?
The most important thing is that I'm writing in Irish Gaelic. That's the most important thing. Being a woman maybe comes into it after that, and being Irish is maybe the least of my worries, quite honestly. I think we're so narcissistically navel-gazing about it in Ireland that this thing about Irish identity really gets severely up my nose. I don't have any problems with that because I write in Irish Gaelic and you can't get bloody more Irish than that. I'm very much a woman and I have managed to empower myself outside the kind of male system. And my poetry comes from there. So I don't have any problems with this, and it's something that you can't take from me. But the language can be taken from me. The language, by being dropped out of the cultural menu, can be taken from me in a way that you can't take my being a woman from me. And I feel much more threatened by the loss of Irish. I have to really work hard just to keep a certain richness of language going. That's a real everyday struggle. Comparatively, gender is not such a big issue.
But I mean, you've just said it, haven't you? That you're very self-consciously identifying with a language which was colonised, stamped over, prohibited, and eventually...
And still exists in spite of everything, in spite of the neo-colonial thing that's going on at the moment. It's still there, and we refuse to be put down.
Do you think, when you're writing in Irish Gaelic, you're expressing precisely that, the forbidden and the transgressive.
Yes, and my mother would much prefer me to write in English, even though she's the native speaker of Irish, and that's great. It gives me an unholy glee. You're right about the transgressive, yes.
Yeah. I'm going to push you now towards the theories of Julia Kristeva, where she distinguishes between the symbolic order in which male business goes on, in which the world is conducted, and the semiotic in which everything bubbles up, as in small children, before they've learnt how to use the symbolic order of language.
Yes, and I think that's how I started writing poetry and how I still write poetry, that it comes unbidden, really, a pattern. It's not words, it's not meaning. I mean, meaning is the last thing that I'll attach to it. Words are the second last thing that I'll attach to it. A rhythmical pattern will come long before actual words and then actual meanings of words. So I would agree with Kristeva's theories about this. And I mean, I don't know they were so forbidden, but I mean, you know, the forbidden fruit is always more interesting. So, you know, all the more reason to do it. I love that level of language. I love it in any language. I love it in children. I mean, it's a form of prayer. It's the most natural thing in the world. It's how birds sing. It's what human beings do naturally before we're told not to.
It's also what a great poet like Emily Dickinson does completely unnaturally, as it were, by calculation.
It doesn't matter so long as it works. It doesn't matter how you set about doing it.
These extraordinary phrases that Emily Dickinson comes up with, they're childlike.
They are, yeah.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, what's that one about, I saw a funeral in my brain? Simple lines like that, the simplicity of it, the artful simplicity of it. I mean, she's managed to hide the skill that goes into that. I think that's wonderful. That's what I'd be aiming at.